Action Park Media.
Kia ora, everyone. So this is a beautiful episode, especially if you have been through miscarriage or postpartum depression. This is with the beautiful Brandy Lynn, and we talk about the magic of motherhood and learning how to treat yourself like a goddess. So this is Pretty Depressed with Brandy Lynn. I am here with the beautiful Brandy Lynn. Now, she has a voice of an angel because I've been scrolling your Instagram all day. It's so amazing to have you here because I felt more relaxed and calm just spending time with you in the Instagram realm today. So I'm really excited for this chat. And I've also had the luxury of having a chat with your husband as well previously on this show. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. I'm happy to hear that. I do feel like I emit a frequency that's like warm golden honey. And that's the intention, you know? So glad that you were receiving some of that.
There's lots I want to get through today, including a topic that I'm so appreciative for you bringing up around postnatal depression. I just thought, first of all, if people aren't familiar with your work, could you kind of explain sort of what you do? Because this idea around sort of energy and aligning and intuition is, for a lot of people, something that they didn't even know they could work with someone to kind of enhance or nurture, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. My work is unique. I have all the credibility of a psychotherapist, but don't identify as a psychotherapist.
Okay.
The work I do is very beyond the books. And I'm a holistic psychology expert and energy medicine practitioner, a sound therapist, and intuitive healer. And my highest passion is working with mothers, because I really believe mothers are like the center of the world, the center of the cosmos, the connection point of the whole universe, what connects the ether to the earth. So when we nourish the mother, we nourish the whole family. The children are nourished. And so if you think of a happy mother, that branches out to a happy husband and happy children and happy babies. So it feels like just so important to give mothers a lot of support. And with that said, we definitely live in a world that's not built to support mothers. It's very much lacking in supporting mothers. So postpartum depression is sadly incredibly common. Birth trauma is sadly incredibly common as well. And just a big lack of the village, you know, that gives mothers the kind of support that we were designed to have, like as tribal beings and creatures. So I really weave together psychotherapy and energy medicine, focusing on helping my clients to reclaim their intuition and connect to their higher self. And my view on like being mentally healthy is to have the highest velocity of your spirit embodied, your essence or your infinite self, your higher self inside of your physical body. So I don't know if you've heard the word like soul retrieval, but soul retrieval comes in a lot in like medicine work and shamanism. Mm. And I really think of that as like a foundational piece, you know, because we're not in charge or we're not sovereign until we have the fullness of our soul and our infinite spiritual aspect of ourself inside of our physical body. And that takes practice. It takes work. It takes a lot of meditation and dedication to live so fully embodied in every day, instead of kind of check out or numb out or freeze or run away or avoid, you know, all these kind of patterns. That
fawn, my go-to is the fawn response. So, I hear you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing this topic to life. I am not a mother. I did go through a miscarriage at the end of last year from my first pregnancy, and was quite open and public about going through that journey. And I was really surprised at the response I got of how many women have gone through that or walked that path of miscarriage, and also felt like very alone. I think I did a bit of work in understanding like the grief for someone who has been like earthside is very different than grieving the hope of something that could have been. And I'm not sure, and excuse my ignorance if that is sort of in the realm of what you're sort of going to talk a little bit about today, but I was really disappointed at how many women have been through that particular experience and not had that support or felt, yeah, that feeling of community or encouragement and stuff. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know in exciting news, you are also pregnant with your first son at the moment, which is really exciting. So yeah, thanks for holding place for this chat. I guess my first question on that is, what can women do if they find themselves in a situation, whether it's, you know, loss of miscarriage or postnatal depression, or yeah, maybe some practical tips or just awareness, and then to curb off that, how can people, if they are a support person to that person, kind of step up and do better? If there's a way to kind of encompass that. And yeah. I'll, when you speak, this is your area of expertise. Of course.
I think that is such an important question. I'm really happy you bring that in, because I know a lot of people do want to help, but they don't really know how. But I really appreciate you just for being vulnerable and for sharing that so much to begin with. And it is a really common experience for so many women. I too had a very early miscarriage, like 3 months before I conceived my first daughter.
Okay.
And the way that felt to me, energetically speaking, was kind of like she came in to clear my womb. It felt like all of my previous relationships, perhaps other potential spirit babies that I could have had with other partners, it all got like cleansed. And she was like, I'm coming in and I'm going to claim my territory, claim my space in here, clean some of this stuff out. And then I had like a really, you know, big bleed.
Yeah.
Then exactly 3 months later, conceived, you know, a healthy, beautiful baby girl. And I've had 3 viable pregnancies, like no miscarriages ever since. So, you know, sometimes as painful and as challenging as those experiences are, there is so much more happening in the spiritual realm and with this soul who's on their own journey of conception than we fully know or are aware of.
Yeah.
However, like if we really practice tuning into that, I think there's more information available to us than we think there is. You know, there's an easier connection to our baby spirits on the other side, for example, or even loved ones who have passed away, like then I think we normally believe we have access to. So I love supporting people and really harnessing those intuitive gifts to go into the subtle realms and to connect with the unseen and invisible forces. And our baby spirits are so our guides. It's really beautiful and profound the way that they are our teachers. So I think just trust it, you know, for the women who have had miscarriages, like to trust that there is a medicine in that there is a reason why this soul is choosing that. And it's all going to come forth and like make sense, work itself out somehow. But, you know, to answer your question more frankly, we live in a culture that really avoids grief. Even in like the DSM or the diagnostic manual that like most psychologists and psychotherapists use, which is part of the reason I decided not to get my license, is because there's a lot in there that I don't believe is truth about the unique nature of a spirit in a human body and what our healing process is with like our nature. But they even say like a typical grief window is like 12 weeks to grieve when somebody dies, for example. And I just, you can't put a timeline or a time frame on grief. Like, okay, you lost a family member 12 weeks later, now you should be over it. No, not at all. I think that grief is something that stays with us for a lifetime. And so for anybody that has experienced loss, whether that be through a miscarriage or through an abortion or through stillbirth, or even, I think, probably the hardest, the loss of a child, you know, just to feel the grief, to stay present with the feelings, to really go into the pain and to allow it to process and to move through you is where the medicine's at. And we can't fully heal until we feel it completely. And more often what we see in our culture is people avoid the negative emotions. And when you avoid the negative emotions, you limit yourself from feeling the highs of the joy and the happiness and the love too. So your whole world becomes kind of smaller in your capacity to feel and to experience exhilaration or just being, you know? And it's like a cleansing, you know. Grief, I think of as the ultimate purification process. It's like our built-in irrigation system. And without the tears, without the grief, we would become like contaminated waters. We would become, you know, think of a pond that has no running water through it. And that's when it gets contaminated with like algae and you can't swim in it anymore. And it's a similar metaphor within us, where if we keep those rivers of our heart flowing, the rivers of and depths, the streams of our soul flowing, then we're cleansing. We're letting our whole being rinse and giving it all back to the ocean, giving it all back to the sea. And you think of all the waters in the world and the amazing design of how a stream turns into a river turns into a lake goes to the ocean. You know, they're all connected. So it's the same within us, that all this sadness and grief and like pain from our human experience, it's all one big web and it needs to be felt. And when we cry, we're like releasing the grief of these experiences, of these beautiful stories of our heartache and our yearnings and our desires and our challenges. We're giving them back to the Great Mother. So I think of that as grief as like a way to stay clear. And if you're not grieving, you're not going to be clear, you know, in your heart. Yeah.
I like that feeling of, yeah, letting it go through you, and what you won't heal if you don't feel. I just had a question come up during that, and I wonder if it's worth going kind of back a step. But when you said kind of the way society is felt, I have an assumption around postnatal depression that it's obviously in my, and again, this is my ignorance, that it's something you don't choose. It's sort of more chemical, but I imagine there's a huge amount of shame, because I imagine for my very brief season of feeling pregnant, I was really excited about what that would be. And I imagine it's a real struggle if you have this idea of what motherhood would feel like and be like. And if you're not feeling that way, I have depression myself. So I'm trying to relate it to like when good things happen, I want it or imagine it would feel a certain way. And when it doesn't, there's a lot of shame and a lot of disappointment attached to it. Is that kind of what it is in a nutshell, postnatal depression? I'm sure it presents in many different ways, but is that sort of the biggest sort of tension there?
I think that there could be a lot of different reasons. Okay. Why here in the States we call it postpartum, like depression post-birth, right? But yeah, I think that a lot of people go into motherhood like with rose-colored glasses on, or sort of idealizing what it would be and imagining, oh, I'm just gonna be so happy and in love with my children the whole time. I really wanted to be a mom like so bad my whole life, and so when I finally had a baby, I was a little bit like, wow, this is harder than I expected. Like, woo, you know, you get going and realize, okay, these diaper changes, the feedings, you know, the naps, like everything that there is to do. And once they're a little older, the preparing meals and the constant cleaning, like it just never ends. I remember I called my mom after I had a baby and I was just like, thank you so much. Like I had no idea. For every diaper you changed, for every time you held me when I was sick, for every meal you ever cooked, because there was no way I could realize just the incredible, infinite amount of labor and work, physical labor and work that is part of motherhood until I experienced it myself. So it becoming a mother really did enhance this experience of gratitude and respect for just all mothers in the world. Yeah. For my mother. But I think what's the real cause of postpartum depression is more that we live in a broken system. It's more that we live in a very patriarchal society where women are now being conditioned to believe we are to do the work of a mother and be a millionaire entrepreneur running our own business alongside of that. So hold all of the earnings of the masculine and of providership alongside full-time devotion to motherhood. And it's just not realistic. Like no human being has that capacity to do all of that in a day or in a season. And I think that there's a lot of struggle in women feeling like when they are just a full-time mom, that they're not doing enough, you know? And I say that like intentionally, because a lot of people say this phrase, just a mom. And I'm always saying there's no such thing as being just a mom. Like there's the highest honor. I mean, there's studies that have shown that a mother, a full-time mother is really doing more than two full-time jobs worth of work. So if you think of doing two full-time jobs worth of work, and we are, we're the cook, we're the cleaners, we're the chef, we're the therapists, we're constantly regulating emotions, we're the teachers, you know, we're constantly reading books, teaching about the days of the week and the seasons and the months of the year. It's just, you know, part of the role. And it's beautiful and it's the deepest honor and it's such a blessing to be a mom. And it's just so full. You know, if you think of someone who is paying someone to do all those roles, someone who is paying someone to be a teacher, a nanny, a cook, a chef, all the things, then those people would probably be more like four or five people with four or five salaries. But a mother gets to be embody all of these, you know. Yep. We get Durga, like the goddess with eight arms, and be doing all of these roles somehow seemingly with so much grace that flows because of the love we have for our children every day. So in general, just mothers are not seen for how much they're doing. Most moms in today's nuclear family setup of our single family homes are alone with their kids all day. So they're literally not seen for the amount that they're accomplishing or doing every day. We're hidden behind mountains of laundry, piles of dishes, grocery shopping. I think, you know, if the husband's out working, then even the husband typically doesn't see majority, like probably doesn't see like 80% of what the mom did and got done during the day just to keep the house in flow, just to prevent disaster zone. So there's a, in our system, in our society, there's a real lack of acknowledgement and a real lack of recognition and a real lack of honoring the mother and seeing her value and validating her value. And if you're like me, who is like a woman in your maidenhood, running her own businesses, I got validated from my community for how good I was as a business owner and as a therapist and as a sound healer. And money is validating, you know, earning income is a way of like, ooh, boosting confidence. It feels good, especially to our ego. And so to go from that form of feeling validated by society to being in a home alone with your baby, feeling invisible and unseen, is really a huge shift and a whole rebirth of your identity. So,
yeah, it definitely seems like a little petri dish ripe for not feeling too great. So,
right. Yeah. So, part of it is just the way our system's set up to not really be the village and to not be supporting the raising of children and the mother and all that she's holding. And part of it's our system's way of really devaluing the role that a mother is and caretakers in general and the caretaking professions, these more feminine nurturing professions are truly like of lesser value in terms of salary and income, you know? But I think the biggest piece from a more psychological lens or mental health framework, for because that's like the outside picture or the big picture, but in a mother's own psyche, like what happened was after she gave birth, a part of herself was also rebirthed. So a part of us really does die and get to be reborn when we give birth and when we have a child. And because of that, there's a huge rebirth of our identity. Who we are in the world changes and it will never be the same. And I think the depression is primarily caused because there's a lack of integration, or the death of yourself happens, but you get stuck in the death and can't find your new self, can't make sense of who the new person is that is a mother and connect them to the self you've always been. And then feeling kind of lost in that process or journey without coming back together, or what I like to refer to as the resurrection point, like hitting that resurrection point in the rebirth cycle, you know? And that takes, because that takes witnessing, because that takes being seen and being held and being supported and being witnessed in a way that most women just aren't, you know? Moms are also usually on a really tight budget. Paying for a home birth and a natural birth, at least here in the States, means paying for everything out of pocket because insurance doesn't cover non-hospital births. So it's like another 10 grand you have to save just to have a baby naturally, you know? So with that in your mind, what, you know, who's going to say, oh yeah, and I want like to pay for a therapist and a coach too. Yeah. But we need it, because how we feel when we give birth and how we feel during those most sacred 6 weeks of postpartum, we refer to it as like the fourth trimester, because your nervous system is so entrained to your baby. You still are one being, you know, once they're outside of you. So how mama feels, baby truly feels, baby absorbs all of that. And so I think of really having the kind of care that women deserve to have during postpartum, and all the postpartum like birth keeping offerings that I'm bringing through, as a true way to prevent postpartum depression. Because when a mother is seen and she is witnessed and she has some support for this massive rebirth cycle, this greatest rite of passage that just occurred, probably the greatest rite of passage that ever occurs in a woman's life, then we really can prevent postpartum depression. After birth, if a mama's home and she's like, I'm supported, I've got someone here making soup, someone here giving me a massage, someone here giving me a sound bath, bringing me bone broth, bringing me tea, just her knowing, having that in her belief system, I am supported. Baby's like, oh, I am supported. We're supported. We're calm. And that starts the mother-baby bond and attachment style between their relationship off to the right start. So it's so, so, so important. And it's so, so, so overlooked for women to really, really create an incredible support system for after they give birth, to integrate fully from that experience. If you think of psychedelics, we know people often say the most important part about the journey is the integration. And birth is really the ultimate psychedelic experience. A woman's truly between the realms. Holding body as it's expanding in the life and death portal. The birth and death portal are one. You know, there's souls coming in and out all the time, in and out. And we're in that space and suspended between worlds with our hormones, just having this incredible orchestra, knowing what to do and how to do and when to do it, that allows our bodies to just like open, you know, 10 whole centimeters. It's
crazy.
Really wild and so incredible. And I fall more in love with the process every time I experience it. But birth is the ultimate psychedelic. And so again, the most important part of it is the integration. And in Chinese medicine and in Ayurveda, it's really practiced and preached and taught that a woman needs to be resting in bed for those first 6 weeks after birth, for those first 40 days, not standing up too much, because we can get prolapse and issues with our uterus and bladder from being upright too much. And we really need to be laying down in bed, staying warm, nourishing ourselves with specific mineral-rich foods and nutrient-dense bone broths and herbal teas, and just receiving. I think giving birth is like the ultimate time that you are a goddess. You are a birthing goddess. Like, and after birth, it just feels so natural. Like, okay, now I receive. I'll be in my bed. Like, receive. Get full permission to receive. Yeah.
That's so, thank you for sharing that. That's, yeah, having not walked that path, I'm taking notes as well, because I have some friends who are pregnant of being like, oh yeah, you're right. It's so easy to be like, send some flowers or do this, rather than be maybe of service in a bigger way, which, and two, hoping that you are in relationship, if that's your journey, with someone who will also be a support person, or having those people, which I imagine is really interesting. Did you have, out of curiosity, and you can speak to as much of this or as little as possible, I am curious, because you're in this space and doing this work. Is a lot of this just from your own learned experience of like feeling things? Because now this will be your third child. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always been like such a, person of self-care. And I think as a therapist, you know, we have to be. I got into therapy before I became a mom to help women heal from sexual trauma. So yeah. It felt like a very natural, I've been doing women's work, you know, women's healing.
That makes me so happy.
Healing, like really focusing on reproductivity and sensual health and how to keep our sensuality alive, how to thrive in our creativity, because if we're turned off, so is our creativity. If we're not allowing ourselves to receive pleasure, we're not really allowing ourselves to fully express. So getting clear on our dharma, getting clear on our mission, knowing what we want to do with our life, it's so connected to that clarity of being in healthy creativity, which is healthy sensuality, which is connected to our ability to feel pleasure, to receive, you know. So sensuality just and creativity, and then our expression in the world, our voice in the world, are really like one stream or one kind of channel.
Yeah.
In the chakra system or in the energetic body. So yeah, I've been focusing on that, you know, since the beginning. So it's been a really natural evolution to kind of go from the depth of holding that work for like 7 years before I became a mom to just focusing really in on motherhood, because birth and birth keeping and supporting women in either fertility, you know, and conceiving, or supporting couples and preparing to give birth, supporting mothers after they've given birth that are really struggling and just need to have some support to relate to it in a new way. Yeah. Yeah, it's been like a really natural evolution for me, and the love for women, you know, is so deep, and there's like nothing I want more in my heart than just to see women thrive and to see the longevity of women. But given my own experience with that and my personal journey of healing as a woman, you know, yeah, healing from sexual trauma when I was 23, and then supporting women all along the years for the last decade, self-care has been very important, right? Yeah. Rituals like yoni steaming and giving ourselves permission to connect to our feminine and to be in our yin and to take baths. And so I think I went into giving birth with like maybe a little more permission for self-care than the average woman, just because that's been so much of the focus of the work, right? Like, we have to allow ourselves to be in our yin, in our feminine. That's where we receive the downloads. That's where we hear the intuitive wisdom.
I'm grinning because it's something that's come up a couple of times. Is I'm very much in my masculine often. I find it really difficult. And I don't know if you can speak to that. I don't want to go over time, but I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast have high functioning depression or anxiety or a type A people pleasers. And ultimately that is more in that masculine energy and the real resistance out of, I think, false narratives or false storylines that I've told myself about not deserving, you know, like it's all this kind of overachieveness that I find it really difficult. And yeah, maybe a good way kind of to segue into wrapping this up, would you speak to maybe people like me who are struggling to get to, like, I just am watching you speak and I'm like, I so wish that I could, you know, almost like relax my shoulders a bit and just trust. I have a real trust boundary with going into the feminine. And yeah, I wondered if you could speak to that.
To me, balancing the masculine and feminine it within ourselves first is like essential for calling in the aligned partnership. Yep. For one, like when I have that work come in the most, it's, you know, when I'm supporting people and they're ready to call in their soulmate. Then it's like, okay, time to really like dive into finding that inner union of your own inner king and your inner queen. So it feels like a foundational piece that, you know, most ideally is like done before. Because whatever we're experiencing with our inner relationship to our own masculine or to our own feminine, that's going to be reflected on what we manifest like outside of ourselves. When I decided I was ready to call in my soulmate, you know, and you've met Charles about 3 months before, I went through this whole healing journey of balancing my inner masculine and feminine. And I even remembered a past lifetime where I was incarnated as a male. Mm-hmm. And I had like the movie real play for me and had like the trauma release, like the cellular discharge where I was like shaking and it only lasted a couple minutes, but it was like a natural psychedelic experience that occurred just through meditation.
Wow, that's so crazy. That's so cool.
Like this thing I've feared about men my whole life was actually like something in me from a past lifetime that needed to be cleared. And to gain more trust in my own inner masculine characteristics, that is what this trust is about, to trust in men, you know, in the world. And seriously, within like 2 days of that healing, that spontaneous healing that happened for me, the caliber of men changed so much in my world. I had men calling me, be like, I've been dreaming about you. I just came back from Costa Rica. I brought you gifts. And I was like, what? Like, just by honoring my own inner masculine, suddenly men started showing up with a whole other level of like honoring me. So as within, so without, you know, and to, as like an energy medicine practitioner and intuitive guide for people, like a session with me can really help like unravel, because sometimes there is past life trauma connected to our divine feminine or our sacred masculine that's just needing to be released, because that imprint's cellular. So it stays in our cells, like from one incarnation to the next. So sometimes we can't do the healing without looking at the past lives, mm-hmm. you know, I've found. And that's part of what took me into focusing a bit more on energy work, because we get the big picture. The full picture. But I think you are a very common woman. And even though I might seem very feminine, I also have that side of me that's like an overachiever or a perfectionist, or like, I love to be productive. I love to get a lot of work done. You know, I'm running three businesses right now alongside motherhood. So yeah. However, if I just keep focusing on the productivity or being in my masculine with the doing, I get off track at some point. I get off out of alignment. And I think of the feminine space as what keeps us in alignment, because it's only from that space of the quietness and the softening where we can really receive the answers from our higher self. Our intuition is more of the feminine, but the execution of listening to our intuition and delivering them, you know, into the earth realm, that's more masculine of what plants or anchors, you know?
Yeah.
So all the self-care rituals, you know, all the baths or just singing or going outside and laying underneath a tree and just, okay, for the next 10 minutes, full permission to be and to just listen to the silence. And that's where the downloads come, even for business strategy, even for what business to birth next. But we can't be just like this culture of people who are doing without our compass.
Wow.
Right. And the feminine is what invites us into the tuning of that compass and the full clarity that's coming from a higher place of, this is what you're meant to do, honey. This is what you were born for. This is why you came here. Mm-hmm. You know, and without it being connected to that true sense of purpose, it's never going to be fulfilling. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm nodding and in complete agreement. I hear you. I'm so conscious that I've gone over my time, and I know I want you to get back to your beautiful daughters. But if people from New Zealand or anyone are listening want to connect or want to find you, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, my website is brandilynbee.com. It's BRANDILYNBEE. So would love for you to fill out the connect form there, and we can continue to go deeper.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time. I feel like I've had this beautiful hug from the inside. So that's a real gift. I'm so grateful and appreciate
it. Thank you, love. Great conversation.